Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin is driving a Ford Escape this week.
A 2015 Ford Escape Titanium is what we're featuring this week. It is tuxedo black, has four-wheel drive, and it, as a matter of fact, it's a four-wheel drive that you don't have to switch anything. It is automatic. They call it intelligent four-wheel drive. It accesses the conditions about 20 times faster than the blink of an eye. So an on-demand system, like readjust as needed so that you can get the handling and traction you need. Plus, you can tow up to 3,500 pounds with the tow package, and you can still kick the back and the lift gate comes up. Well, you don't actually kick it. You put your foot underneath the bumper and the lift gate comes up. It has an adjusting lift gate as well. So if you're a little taller, you can move it up higher. If you're a little smaller, you can move it a little lower and hit the button, and it automatically closes for you. Just a couple of the features of the new Ford Escape.
You're going to voluntarily turn this in at the required time again, or is there going to be another incident?
It will be back tomorrow afternoon, and you can drive it as early as Friday evening before the football games at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury.
That's right. So you go there, check it out, say, look, I'd like to drive the vehicle Kevin Hurst's been driving.
Say hi to Corey. Corey's the one that told me all about the vehicle so I could share the features with you.
Sunbury Motors.
Corey, thanks so much.
Yeah, Sunbury Motors has some incredible vehicles over there, and somehow they see fit to entrust Kevin with them for a week at a time.
You know, somebody over there found religion. All right. Our thanks to Bill Hillgrove, who joined us in the previous half hour. Now we turn our attention to Josh Moyer of ESPN.com. Josh, my friend, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, always good to be here, Steve. Thanks again for having me.
Josh, 4-0. Is this a better football team now than the one we saw in Ireland?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any question. I mean, you know, you've been around this program for a while, Steven, and you know what Joe Paterno was always fond of saying, that the most improvement you'll see is between week one and week two. I mean, the Nittany Lions, their offensive line obviously is still suspect, but the fact they were actually able to run over UMass has to give them confidence going forward. And you know, we've really kind of seen Deshaun, Hamilton, and Geno Lewis become more consistent as the season goes on. So I think without a doubt, we're seeing a better Penn.
What are the tight ends meant to this offense and what John Donovan can do?
I think it's meant everything. I mean, coming into the season, you knew they were going to have to block more. And that wasn't exactly the specialty of Kyle Carter or Adam Brenneman. And I know Adam's injured now, obviously, but the fact is that they were prepared to go in and kind of be that sixth offensive lineman. And I think that's why we haven't seen them be as big of a part in the passing game as we thought, because they're having to stay in and block a little bit. But when you have Jesse James, who's 6'7", and he's been able to really kind of step up blocking, you know, I think that's meant a lot to this offense. And if it wasn't for them, you know, we'd probably see Christian Hackenberg on his back a little bit more often than we already have.
Let's get to the defensive side. They're number one in the country against the run. They're number six in the country in points allowed. When you watch this defense, Josh, what do you see?
I see a completely different philosophy compared to last year. Much more aggressive. You know, Bob Shoup is certainly playing up to Penn State's strengths. He's letting Mike Cole roam around more. Anthony Zettel has kind of been given free rein to be in the position he feels most comfortable at. And we've obviously seen that pay huge dividends. In the first three games, he had seven tackles for loss. And in the last game, he may not have recorded any stats, but he's the guy who helped launch Brandon Bell into getting a sack. And his importance to this defense now can't be understated. Even if we go to the secondary, I mean, we could really look position by position and see how much better this defense is compared to last year. But the secondary was the weak link of this entire team. And when the guy last year, Trevor Williams, who was benched because he wasn't doing well, comes up and is defensive player of the week one week, I mean, I think that tells you all you need to know about you know, just how much this defense has improved.
When you look, you mentioned Trevor Williams. Let's dovetail off of that, Josh. You have Josh Lucas at one corner and improved Trevor Williams at the other corner. For a defensive coordinator, what does that allow him to do now with the other nine if you have two corners playing at a high level?
I mean, it certainly opens you up to a whole lot more other things. I mean, you can blitz more, you can be aggressive. And since day one, I mean, Bob Schoop came in during his introductory press conference. Everyone asked what his philosophy was, and he said, attack, attack, attack. If you have two bad corners, you're not able to do that. You have to be on your heels a little bit, you know, give them a little extra help. But, you know, if they're able to do man-on-man a little bit more often, if they can play tighter coverage, and granted, sometimes it's still loose, but when they're able to do that, it really opens up the playbook a little bit for the defense, and that's why you're seeing, you know, some of these playmakers step up. So it's a tremendous help. You know, Jordan Lucas has obviously proven himself. I think Trevor's still trying to get there, you know, to that point, but he's certainly on the right track.
All right, so let's get to a couple of the younger guys. Grant Haley. Everyone knows that when it comes to recruiting, James Franklin and his staff have really worked it. Well, Grant Haley out of Georgia is one of the guys that they worked to get here. Your thoughts on what you see in him, and do you feel like it's a preview of coming attractions?
Oh, yeah. I mean, coming into this season, I really thought Grant Haley was going to be one of the big contributors to this defense. And James Franklin was able to get so many good secondary guys, so many good defensive backs like Grant Haley and Marcus Allen because you know, there was going to be room for these guys to play immediately. And Haley, you know, he was only a three-star prospect, but the thing that everyone really loved about him was obviously his speed. And James Franklin said before that he had the fastest 40 time out of everyone on the team. So you're coming in as an 18-year-old, and you're already the fastest guy. You know, that obviously bodes well for your future. So, you know, we've kind of seen him overtake Daquan Davis on the depth chart. And Haley, since day one, has only been trending upward. And that doesn't appear as if there's going to be, you know, any sign of stopping. So I think it's nice to have that, you know, number three corner where, you know, you can do some things. And obviously it's his speed that really makes him special.
How would you evaluate Christian Hackenberg so far?
Yeah, well, you know, it might be a little bit difficult if you just take a peek at the stats because he has one more interception than touchdown. But I mean, the fact is, you know, James Franklin said it best on Tuesday. He's put this team on his back. Without Christian Hackenberg, you know, this team is 2-2. You know, maybe worse. There's really no offensive line to speak of. Penn State is near the bottom when it comes to tackles for loss allowed and sacks allowed. He's, you know, withstood a lot of pressure. So even though his stats may not reflect it, I think he's the best quarterback in the Big Ten. And now, there's obviously a reason why one AFC scout said he's the best quarterback in college football right now. And in January, Sporting News was asking the lad if he would go number one overall in the NFL draft 2 years from now. So I think, you know, you can't just look at the stats here. You know, he's stepped up during clutch times, and he's just kind of keeping this offense together. So, I mean, if Christian would go down, I don't think there would be a more devastating injury in college football to a team than that one right there.
Josh Moore, ESPN.com, joining us. Josh, what kind of read do you have on Northwestern?
Yeah, Northwestern is almost in the total opposite position of Penn State right now. And quite frankly, they're reeling. In August, Pat Fitzgerald is kind of taking a lot of heat for this now, but he kind of eased up on practices a little bit. And the belief was that, you know, maybe he was concerned about injuries. Last November, he had a bye week, but he said if there was a game during that bye week, he would have been without 13 key players. So, you know, he seemed to take his foot off the gas a little bit in August. And out of Rittenberg at the time, he visited practice, and he had written that the most energetic part of practice was the watermelon eating contest that happened at the end of it. So, obviously, that doesn't bode well. So, since then, Fitzgerald has intensified the practices, made them work out in the rain. But that's what you can probably allude to or point to as Northwestern's reason for starting off so slow. Now, in the last 11 contests, I think Northwestern has had seven decided by one score, and they've lost all but one of those. So, I mean, this team just doesn't have a lot going for it right now. It's loaded with injuries. Trevor Siemian hasn't been able to get the same power, you know, from his right arm because his ankle is injured. He can't kind of step up. So, for Northwestern, there's really not a whole lot of good to say outside of the fact their true freshman running backs are looking pretty good.
Yeah, very, very good. 2 weeks ago was not a great week for the Big Ten. Last weekend was a better weekend for the Big Ten. I didn't say awesome, incredible, or great, but I said better. What's the state of the conference in your opinion, Josh?
Well, I think it had hit rock bottom pretty much 2 weeks ago. But, I mean, last week I feel like kind of showed that this conference is down, but it's not out. The Big Ten went 12-1 last Saturday, with its only loss being Michigan to Utah. But I think Indiana surprised a lot of people, certainly, with their win over then number 18 Missouri. You had Iowa upsetting Pitt on a great comeback. And you also had Nebraska beating Miami. So I think this kind of renews hope a little bit for the fact that maybe the Big Ten will be able to flip a team into the college football playoff. And that hope wasn't there 2 weeks ago. So we're still kind of learning a little bit about, you know, what teams are for real and what might just be a flash in the pan. And we don't know, is Indiana's defense, was that a turning point or was that an anomaly? You know, at this point, it's hard to figure out. Same thing with Iowa's play calling. They really opened up the playbook last week and were able to really surprise Pitt with their long passes. Now, let's see if they can keep catching teams off guard with that. So, I mean, I certainly think fans should have hope, but I don't think we should get ahead of ourselves either. I mean, I think the Big Ten isn't as bad as we thought it was, but after 1 week, I don't think they're as good either.
Right. I know one thing I try to constantly remind myself of, Josh, is where Penn State is as a program. They traveled 53 scholarship guys to Rutgers. 52 were eligible to play because Diefenbach counts. And the reason I remind myself of that is that I think over the years, I'd say 8 times out of 10, I have a pretty good read going into a game, Penn State's personnel versus the opponent's personnel. I don't quite get the same read now all the time because of the sanctions. Do you fall into the same category, or do you still get a pretty good read on what's going on?
Well, I understand what you're saying there, but for me, I don't know if it's from the sanctions as much as it is kind of the opponents Penn State's playing this year. I mean, and by that I mean, you know, Penn State's pass defense, for example. I mean, they've looked good so far, but, you know, they really haven't been challenged either. I mean, I kind of think that that's still a question mark. But if you look at the rest of their schedule, they don't exactly play, you know, too many good quarterbacks. I mean, look at the next three games. You know, Trevor Siemian, who struggled. Then you have Devin Gardner or Shane Moore. Both have been a disaster. You know, then you have a redshirt freshman in J.T. Barrett from Ohio State. And you just wonder how Penn State is going to be tested. And honestly, before this season, I was thinking, you know, Penn State, you know, maybe 7-5, but, you know, this is a down year in the Big Ten, and, you know, maybe Penn State can be better. It just seems this year especially, you know, maybe there can be more parity in the Big Ten than we thought. And because of that parity, you know, I think it's difficult to gauge where each team kind of fits in this conference right now.
Josh, it's always a pleasure. Thanks a lot for your insight. It's always great talking with you.
You too.
We'll come back. Kevin Herr's analysis of all the interviews in depth as Bob and I will take a break. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Every price on every new Kia has been reduced
and retagged
to the lowest prices of the year. Fall for a new Kia at Sunbury Motors Kia with 0% APR financing.
Yes, zero.
For up to 60 months on all remaining 2014 Optima and Optima Hybrid. The iconic 2014 Kia Soul starts at an incredible $14,769. Sunbury Motors Kia has 2014 Rios clearance price starting at $14,951. The 5-star safety rated 2015 Forte LX as low as $16,865. And 2015 Serenos starting at $22,456. Remember, all new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty. So hurry in to Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip at Hummel's Wharf
or at sunburymotors.com
and fall for your new Kia today.
Tax and tax extra. Must qualify. Specialty incentives apply. Special financing to well-qualified customers through KMF.
Another bizarre commercial for us. As all of you were listening to the wonderful commercials we aired, Bob and I were being held hostage.
I'm just thinking out the baseball playoff scenario. You know, it's now one game wild card. Then it becomes a 2-2-1 best of five divisional series and then a best of seven. And I'm thinking in this best of seven series, do I want to be the team that hosts the first two and the last two, or would I rather be the team hosting the middle three games?
To quote Ralph Fiennes in the movie Made in Manhattan,
Yes.
Never start a sentence with Kevin Thinks.
I don't remember that movie.
Yeah. Well,
I don't remember being referred to in that movie either.
Well, you know, with man. 4 days remaining in the regulars, he's now going back to look up the movie to see if that there was that quote.
No, I don't know.
I can tell you exactly what the quote was. The guy that was in charge of his campaign was named Jerry. And he said, never start a sentence with Jerry Thinks.
but I'm wondering, I mean, if you're in the World Series or the Championship Series, do you want to have, is home field advantage really the first two games and the last two games? Is that truly home field advantage?
Well, when you get four games at home, it is.
It is, but then you have to go back historically. How many have gone to game six? How many of those have gone to game sixes?
Well, the Elias Sports Bureau might be able to tell us. But I would think having the four games, Kevin, starting off and finishing off would be advantageous. But that's just my gut reaction.
I mean, I remember a lot of series that won it were split 1-1 after that first series, after the first two games.
Oh, I remember in 1979, the Pirates played the Orioles for the World Series, and that was the split. And the Pirates won it by winning Game 7 in Baltimore. And Baltimore had the home field advantage. Other than that, I know nothing else about that.
Red Sox, for the first time since 1918, clinched the World Series at home. They hadn't, you know, last year, the other two World Series, they clinched on the road.
Okay, here you go. Going back to 1905,
yes,
when the best of seven series was implemented, 35 out of 96 have gone to seven-game showdowns.
Okay.
So that's 36% of the World Series have gone all seven games. Now, the question is how many have gone at least six games. So you can say at least 36% have gone there. Mm-hmm. Probably, maybe as many as 50% have gone six games. Maybe more. But you know at least the minimum number is 36.
Right. Well, you know, we've still got a pretty...
Doesn't matter.
No,
but see, this is where I disagree with you. This is where this sort of thing comes into play. It shows like this where you can discuss these things. It's like being at the corner bar watching a game on TV going, you know, I don't really know that I like having home field advantage in the World Series. These are the conversations that come up in those situations, Steve.
You don't want home field advantage.
No, I'm not sure if having the first two and the last two is truly home field advantage. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
oh my goodness,
Steve,
you're counting? Yeah. You're counting on losing the middle three games?
Yeah. No, that's my point. That's exactly my point. If you have the middle three games on the road,
look.
If you win one of the first two on the road and you have the middle three games, you can win the World Series at home.
Repeating once again for the hearing impaired. Last year, the Red Sox won this thing. They split against Detroit, took two out of three at Detroit, clinched game six at home. Okay? Went to the World Series, split with the Cardinals, took two out of three in St. Louis, won game six at home. Sounds to me like it worked out.
Yeah, pretty nice.
But game six. There you go.
Yeah, and where was game six?
No, I know that. That's what I'm saying. And that answered
Fenway
my question.
Park.
Right, but that answers my question.
I'm sorry. I mean, I don't have this tons of market research that you have in front of us. I'm just remembering.
Yeah. And, Steve, wouldn't Fenway Park be the home of the Boston Red Sox?
It used to be.
Yes, I believe it is, yes.
That would mean home field advantage to the Red Sox, wouldn't it? Taking this out logically.
I don't know. I always thought having those middle three games at home might be. Well, I might like that. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm looking at it from the year the Phillies played the Rays. And if I remember correctly, the Phillies had the middle three games, didn't they? Am I wrong?
I guess.
We're not sure.
Okay.
You know when?
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. I've got the Encyclopedia of Sports on the other side of the microphone, and he guesses now.
Steve, you know, Kevin said, well, this is the kind of conversation you would have in a neighborhood
bar.
But
I also think that back when they did it, they had not instituted best record has home field. Yeah, that was a big difference where it alternated back and forth between leagues as to who had the home field advantage.
Yeah, but now that doesn't matter anyway because it's who won the All-Star game.
Yeah, it's who won the All-Star game, but still, I mean, I really don't care.
I know you don't. That's painfully obvious.
Okay, I don't care where games are played. To me, okay, I go back to the great Coach Dale in Hoosiers.
Oh, brother, I know where you're going with this. I think it's okay. The same as in our gym in Hickory.
Absolutely.
And he was right.
I'm sorry. Gene Hackman has it right. You think too much. Here's a big one. If you have better players, you have a better chance of winning.
What's next? Are you going to go, if you build it, he will come?
No, that's a fantasy thing.
Yeah, that's... Field of Dreams.
I've been asked like four or five times if I want to go out to the field. I said, why? Is the corn higher? He's rolling his eyes.
You know, he's fallen on the floor.
I have my hand and my forehead in my hand. Where?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I mean, seriously, Bob, I don't know if local authorities know about the hostage situation you and I are in.
It is getting dire as the moments pass.
They're not worried. They're entertained by my thought as well. Is winning home field advantage in the World Series truly home field advantage when you give up the middle three games?
Yeah, you know,
unbelievable.
Steve, when Kevin said this is what people, you know, a bunch of guys talking sports and say a bar room would discuss, I would think it would be more along the lines of what beer are we ordering next, among other things. What snack can we have with the alcoholic refreshments or non-alcoholic, as the case may be? Not about the home field advantage in the World Series.
44 World Series have gone five games or less.
Okay.
44 since 1905.
Okay.
And
the team that won the first two at home won how many of those?
I don't know. I can't. That's going to take more time.
Oh, jeez.
I don't have enough time to
come. And I was on the edge of my seat.
So what you're saying is irrelevant.
Yes.
Okay, so what?
No,
yeah.
No. What I'm saying is it doesn't matter if they won the first two or they won one of the first two.
Excuse me. Boston in 2004 and 2007, okay, won in four game sweeps. Those are two of the 44. The first two games were in Boston. Boom, next. Won the next two in St. Louis and Colorado.
But you realize that almost half, just under half of the World Series games played since 1905 have gone five games or less, which means it ends in the city that doesn't have home field advantage. That's the point I'm trying to make.
You don't know that.
What do you mean I don't know that? Why wouldn't I know that? If it ends in five games or four games, it's still going to end in the field, in the team that did not have home field throughout the series.
How do you know that? How do you know, like, the Baltimore Orioles in 1966 won the first two games in Los Angeles, completed the sweep at home?
Because that would have gone. Well, that would have had to have gone six games, though.
That went four games. The first two games were in Los Angeles. The next two were in Baltimore.
Right.
They swept them.
Okay.
You want to know why? Do you want to know why? They were better.
Oh, forget it.
Yes. Steve,
okay, here's one.
You
How
just don't
times...
like arguing things that you feel are insignificant. That's all.
Okay. Here, how many times has the home team lost Game 7? In the World Series.
Oh, we're fine.
That'll tell
That's
you.
That's the tale of the tape there.
Okay, there's the tale of the tape. Okay? How many times is, because I believe it's a long streak now where the deciding game has been won by the home team.
How many times has the home team lost game seven?
No, won game seven.
Oh, one
versus
game
losing
seven.
It. Versus losing it.
Yeah. And while Kevin is looking all this up, Steve, you know we've got
Now, in 67 and 68, the home team lost. Right? 67, 68, home team lost. Let's see. Game seven, Cincinnati, Oakland. I think that was also lost by the home team. All right? But then you go through and, let's see, 75 home team lost. But see, after that, then the streak changes.
Let's see. One number I can find is the home team is 18-18 in World Series Game 7s.
Okay, but I think the trend has been more toward the home team lately.
Well, but
I just picked out a whole bunch in a row where they lost.
All right, but historically, though, that's kind of proving my point that maybe home field advantage isn't such an advantage.
But you can't use that. The reason you can't use that is that it used to be rotating back and forth between leagues. Okay, now the All-Star game thing, which is stupid.
Absolutely.
All right, but if you look at the playoffs now, okay, the playoff part, not the World Series, the playoff part where it's the fifth and deciding game or it's the seventh and deciding game where record determines who's at home, something tells me that's dramatically different.
Well, Fox did a story, I don't know if it was maybe, I think it was before last year's World Series, and they did over the last decade, it's been a 54% winning percentage for the Major League Baseball teams in the World Series playing at home.
It's not a big deal, okay? It's not a big deal, but I'd rather have it.
Sure.
I mean, Shane Victorino tripled, okay, to knock in the runs that put the game away for the Red Sox. Fenway went absolutely insane. The Cardinals had no chance after that. Zero.
Agreed.
Case, I'm confusing you.
Yeah, case settled.
Okay. I mean, I know the Cardinals beat the Texas Rangers. Silence.
Kevin is ruminating.
What do you want me to say?
In other words, you would rather have three games at home as opposed to four.
I don't know. That's the question I'm asking.
1987 Minnesota Twins did not win a single road game in the postseason and won the World Series.
What I'm saying is if the game doesn't go seven, is it truly home field advantage? That's the question I'm asking.
Well, it depends on where they win.
Yes.
But no, you miss my point. It's not a point of whether you win it or lose it at home or on the road. I'm saying in the definition of home field advantage, the home field advantage is you get more games at home than the opposing team.
That's why they call it home field
advantage. Exactly. If it doesn't go seven games, it's not a home field advantage, is it?
Okay.
All right. Now you're thinking and like, oh no, how am I going to tell him he's right?
No, okay, no, you're right. What are you talking? Okay, you're going to have the entire company drug tested.
We're starting down a real slippery slope.
All right, I mean, look, Kevin. I mean, if somebody sweeps them in four games, you play two there, two here. Yeah, you're right. There's no home field advantage. That's because I'm so much better than you are that we're done.
Yeah,
and that's a good point too.
I mean, come on. This home field advantage is supposed to just work out with the seventh and deciding game or the fifth and deciding game is at your place.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it means.
Yep.
I mean, that's it.
And by the way, in other sports news, Steve,
Bob carefully changes the topic.
Steve, tomorrow the Ryder Cup starts in, I think, Scotland.
Yeah, Glen Eagles is where they're playing. Jack Nicklaus designed golf course. Nicklaus designed it back in the early 90s, and then he also did a redesign in 2012. A Nicklaus designed golf course puts a premium on shot making. It's something where they'll put into play the ability for you to make shots, and if you make shots, you will score well on the course. If you don't make shots, you make a mistake, you get into deep trouble. Glen Eagles is a stop on the European Tour, so some people think the Europeans have a major advantage, yet there are several players in the European team that have never played well at Glen Eagles. Ian Poulter's one. He's never made the cut at Glen Eagles, as an example. So the Europeans are heavy favorites. It's going to start early in the morning. I believe that Jim Furyk, Zach Johnson, Hunter Mahan, and I'm trying to think who the fourth one, will not be a part of the morning round, but those four will be a part of the afternoon round. And Furyk's a guy that actually has a decent Ryder Cup record and is the highest-ranked American, ranked third in the world.
And I know Mickelson is in the last pairing in the morning session for the U.S.
Right.
team.
With Keegan Bradley.
Yes.
And he and Keegan Bradley were a dynamic team 2 years ago where they went, I think, 3-1 between them in their, and had a great Ryder Cup. So everyone feels that they are a good team.
You know, Phil and Bradley are in the 3:20 a.m. match 4.
Right.
You know, Steve,
you have to remember this is a 5-hour time difference,
yeah,
too.
Right. So. The one thing about the Ryder Cup is I am not a golfer. I'm not a golf fan other than, say, the big tournaments. But the Ryder Cup does get me excited. I think it's a thrilling format. I like it if it comes down, obviously, like most fans, to the final day, the final singles rounds. Yeah. And it's actually, I think, in that sense, fun to watch for a fan who may not be a fanatical golf fan.
Well, yeah, it's because it's America against Europe. Now, there's a home course advantage. Now, if you look up the home course advantage.
No, don't start. Just don't start.
Where'd you get that idea, Steve?
Just don't start. Although, I will say this. Bradley, Mickelson, Garcia, McIlroy, that is one that I think even entertains the slightly interested golf watcher.
Sure it does. McIlroy, of course, the best player in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
Garcia actually has quietly had a really, really good season, and Garcia has an exemplary Ryder Cup record. And then Bradley and Mickelson play very well together, whether it was the Ryder Cup 2 years ago or the President's Cup last year. They play very, very well together. And Glen Eagles, again, really good course in Scotland. It's a Jack Nicklaus design course. So
they should play this like a scramble. That would be fun.
Oh, boy.
Nah.
And again, the ability to take the show into the abyss.
Yes.
I wonder if it's an acquired skill.
All right. There's Monday night. There's Thursday night football.
And who might that be?
And I do have a question. Giants and Redskins, right. My question for you is, should Thursday night football be adjusted? Should Thursday night football be adjusted to where you should only be able to play it if you're coming off of a bye week?
Well, essentially, you end up with a bye week off the weekend. I mean, the rule is only two teams are allowed to play two Thursday games during the season, and that's Green Bay and Seattle. They're the only two that are allowed to this year. You want to know why?
Yeah.
Because they played the opening game of the season where they had 10 days to get ready for the opener. Thus, they can come back into the rotation. That's why.
Well, I'm asking.
They don't have anybody else have to play a multiple Thursday night game. So if you can do it once, you can do it once. It's just the equivalent. It's like, for example, Dallas, Detroit, okay, they play on Thanksgiving every year. Okay. What's the difference?
Well, you mentioned it with Bill, though. I mean, do you really think that Atlanta-Tampa Bay game was going to be that ugly?
Well, I don't think Thursday night games are really that great.
But that's my point.
But, you know, but to be frank with you, these are professionals. This is what they do.
I'm aware.
Okay.
But shouldn't that game come off of a bye week?
No one has to miss class, by the way.
No, it doesn't need to come off of a bye week. Okay. They're professionals. It's what they do. Their job. I don't really worry too much about Thursday night game. Well, the quality, this, that. They're professionals. They are not college players. You have 17 weeks to play 16 games. It's the way it goes. You can't have a bye week around all of them.
It would be a scheduling nightmare, Kevin, I have a feeling.
I'm just not a big... I have not been a big fan of Thursday night football this early in
the
season.
They're professionals.
Okay, they're professionals. That's fine, but let's have a good game then. Maybe my feelings will change.
I reserve Sundays for the NFL. Thursday night, I'm in a college football kind of mood.
I'm not even sure I like college football on Thursday night.
Oklahoma State, Texas Tech is the Thursday night game tonight.
You know, Oklahoma State has their offensive coordinator, Steve, is a guy from Shippensburg University who was the offensive coordinator there who really did an amazing job. And he got grabbed last year by the head of coach at Oklahoma State because
Mike Gundy.
He just found out about the miraculous things this fellow was doing down at Shippensburg with an offense that just exploded all over
the
division.
And then the other side is Cliff Kingsbury, who has a wide open, wild offense at Texas Tech that could be pretty entertaining.
I think so.
So, I mean, as I sit in my living room and enjoy these games while Captain Bitter ruses over them.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Notre Dame and Texas A&M will play a home-home series in 24 and 25. Yeah. Mind you, the kids playing in that are now in first grade.
Yeah, that's a thrilling thing on my... I put that on my advanced scheduling.
I'm exaggerating, but yeah. I mean, that's 10 years down the road. Anybody playing in that game now would be at best, what, fifth grade, sixth grade?
No, they'd be about second grade.
We could do it your way and wait and have nobody available.
I understand, but do you really need to do it 10 years in advance, Steve? I mean, is five far enough? Do you really have to go 10 years?
That game in your schedule, you do it to go 10 years in advance on. You really have to get that one game locked in and then craft. Let's take the Big Ten.
So this is your marquee game and you're building everything around it, is what you're saying.
Right. Now, this is Notre Dame, so they have flexibility. The Big 12, let's see, the Texas A&M is in an 8-game mode in the SEC. In the Big Ten, you have 9 games starting in 2016. You'll have 3 non-conference games. So you have to take your 3 non-conference games and you have to pick one. And then you build the rest of your schedule around it because you want to make sure that in years where you have 4 Big Ten home games, your 3 non-conference games are all at home. When you have 5 Big Ten home games, you can have 2 of your 3 at home and you can play 1 on the road. Thus, if you have proper planning and plan ahead 10 years ahead like that, you can properly craft your schedule around it.
Okay. As these leagues grow into these massive conferences that they are you hurting yourself by planning these games 10 years out?
Well, if you have 9 conference games like Penn State's going to be involved in every year starting in 2016, no. I mean, you're trying to lock up a marquee opponent for that middle spot. That's what you're trying to do. That way you craft the rest of the schedule around it. So you can get your 7 home games. You can then at that point start getting, buy those other 2 games essentially with guaranteed money. Sometimes that guaranteed money goes up to about $1 million now, $1.1 million to the opponent coming in, and then you keep the rest by arrangement. So that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get your schedule crafted in such a way that also gives you the 7 home games, which gives you the finances you need to keep your other programs going.
I guess the other issue, though, is if Notre Dame or Texas don't become as successful a program as they are now, that's going to hurt your strength of schedule.
Well, there's no question you roll the dice on stuff like that. For example, Penn State had a home-and-home with Syracuse, I want to say in 7 and 8, 8 or 9 or something like that. And I think it was 8 and 9. They played up there in 8, and then Syracuse came there in 9. Well, that was supposed to be the marquee non-conference opponent for Penn State. When they scheduled that, Paul Pasqualoni was the coach at Syracuse, and they were averaging 10 wins a year when they scheduled it. The program then went downhill, and suddenly it became an ordinary non-conference game with no jump to it. When they scheduled it, you're absolutely right. When they scheduled it, they had averaging 10 wins a year.
I can just see the Notre Dame head coach going to a midget football league and telling the fellas, if you guys sign with us, in 10 years we'll be playing Texas A&M. Somehow, I don't think that'll work.
I don't think that's going to be.
No, but I, you know what I'm saying is that I don't even think it's getting just too many variables between now and then in college football with conference realignment.
Right. And I understand what Steve's saying, well, and I get that.
But conference realignment, that's done. That's finished.
No, I never say never about that.
You want to know why? Because of the grant of rights. The grant of rights changed everything. Every conference except for the SEC has grant of rights where you've signed over your TV to the conference that you're currently in. That's why you're not going to see roulette with conferences, I think, as time. I think the grant of rights idea has stabilized expansion. It's been another incredible Kevin Herr half hour.
I don't know. If I'm a Notre Dame fan, I'm just getting excited for 2024 or for 2024.
I think they ought to worry about 2014.
Look, it's just for their planning. I don't think Brian Kelly is sitting there.
Yeah.
Whatever. This is just for their own planning purposes. That way you know how you craft your schedule, because Notre Dame also has the ACC component. They have to schedule 5 ACC opponents a year. So that's also part of what they're trying to do. And then how does it fit in with USC? Yep. How does it fit in with Stanford? I mean, there's a lot of things that they have that are built in, even though Notre Dame's not a member of a conference. Right. There are between the service academies, USC, Stanford, and the ACC, they're locked into a lot of games now.
And Michigan State?
Michigan's off the schedule.
Yeah, and that's a shame.
And Georgia Tech, isn't that the token game that they play in for the conference?
But Ohio State, no, they have to play 5 games, Kevin.
Is it 5? Okay, I couldn't remember how many they played 5 in the conference.
They have to play 5 ACC teams. And plus, Ohio State is going to be on their schedule in a home and away coming up. And a lot of people thought that was Ohio State's way of sticking it to Michigan for not being on the schedule. We will wrap things up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Our thanks to Bill Hillgrove, who made tremendous sense. To Josh Moyer of ESPN.com, who made tremendous sense. To Bob Buhner, who always makes tremendous sense.
And some dollars.
And also our thanks to Kevin Herr for being on the show.
Who made sense in my world.
Yes. And every once in a while, Kevin invites us in to take a peek in his world.
Yes. Tell the Orkin man we said hi.
That's it. I quit. Not doing this show tomorrow.
And Steve, you're off to do a bit of a radio show tonight, starting at 6 o'clock, I understand.
Yes. James Franklin tonight, Penn State football show. He makes tremendous sense.
Yes, he does.
Is it true you quit?
I'm going to quit an hour early tomorrow. How's that?
Oh, no.
Huh. Wow.